Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another edition of America's Most Unwanted. More importantly, the people that find them. The bail bond industry is an interesting one, and one that is often misunderstood. Joining me this week to look at one particular case is my good friend William Cobra Storbs, bail bondsman and recovery agent. Cobra, welcome.
Thank you, Simon. It's always a pleasure to be here.
And also on the line, we have Matthew Todd. I guess Cobra and Matt, a.k.a. Silver, have become a bit of a unit. Matt, welcome.
I hate everybody. Thanks for having me aboard. It's a pleasure.
Also on the line is Rod Dowston, general agent for Palmetto Insurance and owner of Surety 3. Rod, always delightful to chat with you.
Simon, thank you very much, and I'm happy to be a part of your board here. Thank you again.
And last but by no means least, Ron the Hammer. Ron, I still don't know what your surname actually is, and I doubt I could pronounce it anyway, but it's great to have you on the line.
It's a pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
And what is your surname?
It is Rutkowitz.
Okay. I couldn't pronounce it, and I'm sure I couldn't spell it.
The Hammer for short.
Yeah, yeah. So from here on in, we'll just refer to Ron as the Hammer. Okay. It was a pretty interesting week. There's lots of fugitives out there, but let's talk about one, John Charles Price. His flee from justice came to an end on Thursday. The story, though, is so bizarre. I doubt that few people would believe it is even true. Who would like to give us the thumbnail sketch? Ron, why don't you talk us through the story?
Well, we were pretty much behind an eight ball up until about, I guess, Monday or Tuesday of this past week, and a certain piece of information came to light, and we were able to do some things that put us pretty much right on top of him. And around 2 o'clock on, I think it was, wasn't it Wednesday, Cobra?
Yeah, Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Hold on 1 second. We have a caller from 478. Hello.
That's my Georgia boys. That you, Don? That's me, baby. How you doing today? I'm doing good. I asked Don to join us on the program, call in there, because in the event that our fugitive decided to go to the Macon way, we're thinking, Don is a bounty hunter in Georgia, So we had his relatives' places all taped out, and Don led that team that was in Georgia waiting for the little bus.
Okay, welcome, Don. Okay,
thank you.
Let's go back to the story here. Ron, you were rushing ahead of yourself a little bit. What was the actual reason that Mr. Price was being sought by the authorities?
Oh, because he's a sick monster who likes to look at evil pictures of poor little kids.
Okay. That's a good description. Okay, we have another caller. Someone coming in from 239. Hello.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, we can trade hellos. What's your name?
My name is Sid.
Hey, Sid.
How are you?
Sid Showalter and I shared a stint on the USS Saratoga, him in the 1960s and me in the 70s. And Sid is a retired veteran from the United States Navy and a good guy. And he's been missing me all day. He's either the fugitive or I'm the fugitive, but we've been missing because I told him, join us on the show and stand by and listen to our latest endeavor.
Okay.
Sid, delighted to meet you. Feel free to jump in anytime you want. Okay, back to the story. So, Mr. Price liked to look at pictures of child porn. Is that correct, Ron?
Yes, sir. He was a. We had previously bonded him on 50 counts of possession of a sexual or possession of photographs and or videos depicting sexual natures of children, he decided that he was going to fake his death and attempt to abscond from the law. It didn't work out well for him. We'll just put it to you that way.
Okay. I really like the fake death. And I've been looking at it seriously for a couple of days now. But there's so much that doesn't add up. Well, let me see if I get this correct. He goes canoeing at probably something like, well, he had to have left home at 4 a.m. Makes a 911 call at 6:35, claiming he's hurt his shoulder. Don't you feel that the cops were somewhat lackadaisical in the fact they didn't seem to pick up on the fact that there wasn't a canoe found, there wasn't a body found, there wasn't a car found, there wasn't a friend found, and the two vehicles that the guy owned, a Land Rover and an RV, were sitting in his driveway.
I mean, that, yeah, and so was the canoe.
Yeah. I just found the entire thing completely strange.
Oh, it was strange, but my theory now that we have, now that he's been caught, is that early that morning, because a tidbit of information that didn't get put out on the last show was that when the detective showed up at Mom's house to let her know about the 911 call, Mom was not home. And she hadn't been home, according to the neighbors, for approximately 2 hours. And they showed up, the law enforcement showed up at about 10 o'clock. So she was gone by 8 o'clock that morning. And my working theory now is that Mom drove him to Daytona to a specific place where he held up for a few days. She came back, showed up at 10, was there for the detectives to speak to, and then, of course, she jumped into her acting into her act saying, "Oh, my God, I can't believe he's gone, blah, blah, blah." And she stuck to that story through the whole thing, knowing full well she knew exactly where he was. And at that point, somewhere along the line, while he was on the run in the Daytona area, he met up with someone and purchased or somehow came to acquire a second RV that he was living in. And what's important to note right now is when I reached out in the early on in this investigation, I reached out to Cobra in an effort to utilize one of his resources that he had access to on a particular license plate that was on a older Subaru that John Price apparently owned at an earlier date, just a couple months prior to his disappearance. And that was the working theory was that he had fled in that Subaru. Well, we later found out a few days later, after kind of chasing our tail a little bit on the Subaru, that he had sold that Subaru to another party in Orange City, which would have put him in the Daytona area. And what the interesting note is that on this new RV that he was living in, the tag from the Subaru was on the RV.
Which brings me to the conclusion that he didn't sell anything, Simon. What he did is there's a special formulation out there of some chemicals that if you feed it properly to any automobile, especially a little car like that, it will grow into a full-grown-ass motorhome.
Chip for grown-ups.
Yeah, I got a little blast for you here. What the hell happened to my shit? My shit done went off. Oh, still, we're going back at it, boy.
Oh, okay. We have another caller on the line. Someone from 386. Hello?
Yes, this is Marty.
Hi, Marty.
What about Marty? How you doing, brother?
How's it going, brother, man? How you doing?
Doing good. Watermelon Marty was our secret informant that was handling Putnam County to the east and west. And in the event that he showed back up in Putnam or thereabouts while we were all up in Ocala, it was Marty's job to hit 911.
Hey, Cobra.
Yes, sir.
Cobra. You was on him like a tick on a dog, man. When you called me that night, the first night you was on him, he was within 20 miles of him, man. Great job.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. But it took a whole village to catch this idiot.
Yeah,
okay.
I know. What a great job it did, Cover. You know, I'd hate to be a criminal and have you after me, man. It might be I'd have to give up that life of crime, you know what I mean, as long as you existed. I'm going straight down, Cobra.
Okay, Matt. I'm going to go to you with this question because you seem like the thinker. Surely the first thing you do is to figure out what vehicles someone has. And it turns out that Mr. Price had a second RV. Now, yeah, he might not have registered it. Was that the case? But did you look for another vehicle?
Yeah, well, Cobra came up with the information that, you know, we talked, it had to be a second. We were thinking it was a second RV. We got a receipt that showed that he had bought parts prior. I think it was almost like a month before his disappearance. That showed he went to an RV store and bought at least $300 worth of parts. But when checking out his other RV, you know, where were the parts at, or where were any receipts left in? You know, there was no receipts left. So we were thinking there was a possibility there was another RV out there.
Well, he thought he could hide in the Ocala National Forest, which is hundreds and hundreds of miles of campgrounds and endless sites that is not even campgrounds. And, you know, Cobra figured that out right quick. Cobra was on him from day one, man. He knew within 20 miles of where he was at.
That's my pants up right there. Hey, listen, just a short thing. Marty, the Hammer, a.k.a. Ron, who owns Valentine Bell Bond there in your town, he may be running for sheriff, and I'd like you to put all those hillbillies to vote for him.
Well, Cobra, you know what? Cobra, you know what, man? I love you. I believe in you. You're an awesome guy. You're straight up. You believe in God. You believe in all the right things. And you know where I live. I live right here where you caught the guy. And you know what? If you tell me to vote for anybody, I'm going to do it for you because you know the last sheriff let us down.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
And Cobra, listen. Cobra.
Here's your buddy.
Cobra.
Yes, sir.
I've got to go to a recital for my grandbaby, so I got to leave you, man. Listen, I love you like a brother. Maybe we meet up with my RV in Ocala National Forest and remiss about it here later, okay? I love you. Bye.
Okay. So let's get back to the story here. Rod, I'm not sure you were mad keen on getting involved in this.
I'm sorry, you said Rod or Ron?
R-O-D.
Well, my involvement with this was very, very limited. I'm the guy they call to ask which way to turn. So that's my involvement. They call me and say, Rod, we need to know which direction to turn. I look on the map and say, go right or go left. That's about my extent to this.
All right. Now, let's go back to October the 2nd. Ron, that's
yes.
R-O-N. October the 2nd seems to be the day that everything seemed to start to go south.
We got a lot of background. We got a lot of background noise there from somebody.
Yeah. Not
me.
It's
really, really bad. Maybe someone need to take it off speaker or something because it's really bad.
Okay.
All
someone dropped off, and it seems to be better now.
Better.
All right. So, Ron, October the 2nd, and excuse me if I get this wrong. Our friend Mr. Price tells his mother that he's going to go shrimp fishing with a friend. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and October the 3rd, that there's a 911 call made along the lines of, "Ouch, I've hurt my shoulder." And,
yep.
And I couldn't have, I couldn't call before because I got something tangled up in the canoe's motor, and it's taken me an hour to, you know, dry the phone out. Am I correct in that?
You are.
Now, think also a that there's mention made of dropping off a friend.
Yes, there was. He was supposedly, this friend was coming through town and wanted to go shrimping, and he was going to pick Mr. Price up, and they were going to go shrimping. And of course, we know now that that was utter and total bullshit.
Right. Nothing beats a good dose of bullshit. I mean, I'm 59 years old. I'm an expert on bullshit.
Hey, you
want to
hear that? I got that bullshit right here. Here's that bullshit.
Okay.
Most
of that was completely incomprehensible, but I'm sure it was the 911 call.
Yeah. For those of us that heard the 911 call and analyzed it, you can definitely say the stress level of his voice wasn't where it needed to be, first of all. And second of all, you're adding detail in there that wasn't necessary to make a point, instead of, you know, really wanting to be cute. So you could tell it's full of shit right off the jump.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well,
all right, so anyway, the guy ends up missing, and that was October the 3rd. October the 6th, the judge says, "I don't give a rat's ass. You know, he's just not in my courtroom, you know, for his trial. So I want him. Go find him. Yeah? If he's alive, I want him. If he's dead, bury him. But I want this. I want this matter closed. Now, it seems to me that not much happened for about a month. Ron, would I be correct in that assumption?
Well, you, as an outsider looking in, you would be. You would be. You would think that nothing by way of law enforcement or anything was being done on that case. However, I can attest to you that behind the scenes, Karen Seacrest and myself, and even Cobra can attest to this, because I reached out to him for a couple of resources that he has that I didn't have in the early goings, but we were on this case from jump. From the moment he jumped, we were on it. And we conducted, I've got just in interviews, going back to include mom and other individuals who had any knowledge of the defendant, I have over 4 gigabytes of video.
Ouch.
Wow. Ouch.
So we were out beating the bushes and doing just good old-fashioned interviewing and everything else to try to get any kind of information on. And for the most part, this guy was, I mean, not to give this guy any credit, he's not, I mean, that he's not really due, but he broke all ties with the people that he knew except for one, except for Mama.
And coupled with the fact that he was well-trained, I mean, he had similar training that what we have. He had some kind of securities business before. He knew to do certain things. He knew not to do certain things. And except for, you know, something very valuable that he overlooked, basically he outbunked the situation. He was smarter than the situation required him to be, and that's what led to his capture. This guy right here was very well versed in illusion and hiding out and doing various things. I mean, he must have read some books somewhere on how to do this stuff, because every time we would get crackerjack close to him, it seemed like something would happen and throw us way off target. And then finally, I mean, it just caught up with him. He made a few mistakes, but basically he was trying to go off the grid 100%. And had he been successful going off the grid, chances are catching him would have been years to come. He got so well into it that he knew once he got inside that motorhome, my bet is he never came out of that motorhome again, because he had his little friend, Mr. Wilbur, and Mr. Wilbur would pump the gas and go into stores and do various things for him, and he didn't need to expose himself. And one thing that a lot of people don't know, a motorhome on a Florida highway or anywhere is not subject to search. And you
don't say that.
Well, you can't very well look inside. You have to get voluntary search for that, number one. Oh. Number two, they would have to issue a warrant to bring it in to have it searched. In fact, that's what they're doing now. When it seized it, they wasn't even able to search it until the marshals are getting their warrants together, and they've got some of them together, I understand, right, Ron? And then they're going to get the more. But as long as he stayed in the back of that motor coach, the only accessible part to law enforcement is that driver's seat, and if they can see the seat beside him, and that's it. They can't do anything else unless they get a search warrant for it. It's just like a house on wheels. So he's
exactly.
The first part.
And I can let you know, I can tell you now, Simon, after his capture, Detective Mike Dodd with the Marion County Sheriff's Office obtained a search warrant for Price's RV, and authorities found, and I'm gonna list these for you, an iPad, an iPhone, a Gateway laptop, and a bag containing several thumb drives, CDs and DVDs, and an external hard drive. The thumb drive, the first thumb drive they came across, and the only one that didn't have a password protection protocol on it contained 391 more files.
Probably accounts for why the felony counts against him leapt from 50 to 70 yesterday.
That's only a wild guess. Yeah, it's going to go up again as well.
You know, also there, Todd was asking, you know, while we got into this case, he says, Cobra, what was the biggest bond you ever caught? I said $1,022,000, which one is larger than even Dog got a hold of. And I just wanted to tell you, Todd, if this guy, if it goes the way I think it is, and his bondable charges will probably well exceed $2 million because out of the 300, 400, or how many graphic images they found, they only put 20 more on him at $20,000 a piece so Marion County could hold him. Otherwise, they'd have to ship him back to St. John's. But I foresee that there's going to be literally thousands and thousands and thousands, and that's in the triple thousands, of photographs because apparently the entire time he was on bond, he did not stop doing what he was doing. He was still giggity-giggity in a corner someplace trading. And that's another thing. And Todd focused on this, and we located every sexual predator that we could find in his trail because what they do is they trade these things like trading cards among themselves. They're just like trading cards are, and they trade them off to each other, and I've got this. Can I get three of those? I'll trade you this one for five of those, depending on how graphic they are. I mean, it's a pretty sick world. Ron, at the time I got in trouble up there in Putnam County in 2009, they had an operation called Operation Orange Grove, and they were trying to round up all these sexual predators across the state of Florida. T.J. Hart covered the story. I think they got about 50 of them, and 49 of the 50 had a book or a CD or something in their possession or in their computer that told other ones how to kidnap, tie up, and rape a child. That's what this book was all about, or this pornographic stuff was all about. So there is a network among pedophiles that if you're able to crack into it, it puts you a little bit closer to them. And Todd picked up on that right away. In fact, we still don't know what Mr. Wilbur is really wanted for other than something to do with alligators. Now, I don't know. You got to be a pretty strong sexual pervert to be messing with an alligator.
Okay. Let's hold off Mr. Wilbur Lawrence to his friends for a moment. Rod, I want to ask you a question. Normally I talk about lizards and, you know, getting arrested. My bond is $1,000. But I'm going to ignore lizards. I do something horrendous, and my bond is $250,000. My mother, bless her little cotton socks, feels sorry for me, and comes up with the 10%, $25,000. So I'm out of jail, but that $25,000 is non-refundable. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. Now, I do a runner. I don't want to go to jail, so I buy myself an RV and head off to a forest. Mum Bear's already out $25,000. The court system's kind of grumpy. But he want full payment, I'm guessing.
Yep.
Where does the payment come from?
we were about to make Mom completely and totally homeless because she placed her home to secure the face value of the bond, her home as well as her son's.
Okay. Would that have covered the $250,000?
Well, it would have been a good start because there's no guarantee once you start a foreclosure proceeding, there's no guarantee that when that piece of or when those properties are sold on the courthouse steps at auction that it will bring what the property is actually worth.
Okay. All right. So simple answer. Someone's going to pay. Here's the trickier answer. Mr. Price is in jail, correct?
Correct.
All right. The $25K wasn't redeemable in any fashion to begin with, so we can ignore that.
Right.
But it's got to cost money to hunt people down. You know, I hear all the time, you know, stories about, it cost $10 million to, you know, track some guy down that shot some folks, and you know they were hiding in a forest. But we kind of ignore that because, yeah, that's up to the cops. Yeah, and you know how many cops they put on it, how many helicopters, pretty much irrelevant. We just want the guy caught. Now, in a case like this, you got some recovery agents. I would not be so crass as to refer to them as bounty hunters. I guess the question I'm getting to is, how big is the pot? I had always assumed that, you know, the pot was only as big as the 10% surety deposit.
Well, I see where you're going, and I'll go ahead and give you your answer. Had we searched for him on a simple revocation, then we're capped as agents at 10%. Okay? We can only go up to the 10% above and beyond what we already collected in an effort to recoup our losses for the apprehension. Once there's a breach of the bond, that 10% is no, or that the percentage that we're held to earlier on is no longer part of the equation, because once there's a breach of the bond, we stand to lose $250,000.
Right.
So at that point, we can spend up to that in an effort to locate him. And she's still, Mom's still on the hook for the nut. So basically what happens now is we went ahead, we did it, we used the civil courts, and we did this early on. We got an attorney retained who went ahead and filed the foreclosure proceeding because we weren't, so that we had both avenues covered. We had recovery agents that were trying to get Mr. Price into custody, and we also had the side avenue of taking action against Mom's properties. So we had kind of two different ways of skinning this cat. Well, now that we've caught him, now she's not responsible for the $250,000, but she's responsible for all the costs, and we can tie those two properties up to pay those costs.
Just out of idle curiosity, what would be the magic number?
Well, I can't speak for Karen's amount because I don't know, because she's actually been, she did a little bit or a little bit more than I did on this case because it was hers. But she and I were on this case for 8 weeks. Cobra and Matt were a little less than that. You know, they were less than that because they came in later on, so I don't know what their costs that they've incurred and what they charge. I can speak to mine. My costs are $35 an hour that I was out, and at 600 investigative hours, because it's 300 just on the phone with the marshals, and I've had at least 300 of beating the bushes and being out in the field, comes to roughly about 19 grand.
Okay, so in this particular instance, the usual 10% recovery fee goes out the window.
Correct, because in a breach of the bond, because the bondsman in this case has incurred these extra exorbitant costs of not only doing like database searches and all of her time, energy, and effort, but she actually hired out, she requested, because I'm not a contracted employee, I mean, she didn't contract with me to help her. She picked up the phone and said, hey, I need help. So, I mean, it's a matter of we're going to bill this mother for the amount that we're out for having caught her son.
Oh, okay. I won't hold your feet to the fire. Just give me a guesstimate. You know, how much money do you think Mama Bear is looking at?
Rough estimate, ballpark, probably close to 58,000,
60,000. Wow. She's going to be one upset, the lady.
Is that just me and Todd's fees? Because I noticed you said $35 an hour. Me and Todd charge $105 an hour, and if we got half the time you got, holy shit, man. You better rethink that, and I got a real good question for you. You said you weren't contracted. She called us all and said, help her out. What happens if she says, I don't want to pay y'all now because I didn't contract with you? So you got something that we're going to get paid or what?
As I told you, and as she has told you, and Matt both, she has got to see what she thinks about a mama before she can say. I mean, there's no guarantee. You know how the civil system works.
Oh, so this will have to go through the civil system before
Mom had originally said she was gonna move to Georgia. Well, once her little baby boy got arrested, she's not moving now. So now, and she's gone and got herself an attorney, and she's going to attempt to fight this foreclosure in some way, form, or fashion. So we're going to have to let a judge decide whether or not, or what we're entitled to for what work we did. What you're going to need to do is you're going to have to provide us with an invoice of your time, energy, and effort that you were on the case, as well as Matt, so that we can submit that to the judge.
Oh. Okay, I don't want to start an argument here. It's not what I'm what not what I'm good at. Let's move on. There's another character involved. Mr. Price apparently bought or acquired or somehow got hold of an RV, and he wasn't traveling alone. I understand he was accompanied by one Lawrence Wilbur. By the way, I love the guy's hairstyle. I guess the circus, was done for the season. I'm great hairstyle. Cobra, what do you make of our friend Lawrence?
You know, birds of a feather flock together, Simon. And this guy right here, I mean, we already know our guy was sitting in that motor home looking at these depicting pictures of little children going giggity, giggity, go. So I'm wondering if this guy is like nature to him, or he just got a fetish with some kind of alligator shit. You know, he has a warrant out of Georgia, but they would not extradite him. Now, one thing, I kicked myself in the ass because he had so much information that he wanted to share. That's what the marshals told us. If you want to take him back home, he's liable to tell you all kinds of crazy stuff. And we opted at the time not to do it. I kind of wish we had to find out just what his deal was. Now, he's much older than Mr. Price, and I also see that he's a veteran of some service. But I sure would like to know just what his play in all of it is. And I'm probably going to have to render that back to Ron, because Ron has been in more contact with the Marshal Service and everything than we have, and he may be able to shed some more light on just what Lawrence Wilbur's plot and all this was.
Okay.
According to the lead investigator out of Marion, he was very cooperative upon Mr. Price's arrest. And when they spoke to John about the things that they found in the motorhome, he initially tried to put it off on a handyman. I don't know if that's Mr. Wilbur or what. It doesn't really say, but the information that we've had so far is that he was very cooperative with them and gave up his ID, told them who he was, gave them a way to contact him, which he still has not texted me back, Cobra, so I don't know if he's working something else or he may be off with the family. I don't know. But he was very forthcoming with information, so I don't necessarily think that they're looking at him as knowing anything about it. But then again, he may have, and they may be investigating that.
A question for Rod, as in R-O-D. Rod, the guy apparently has a warrant for something involving alligator heads. The idea boggles my mind. I've watched all of the Crocodile Dundee movies and enjoyed them, but you know how much fun you could have with a crocodile head. You know, it's beyond my comprehension. Would this be a bond that you'd be interested in?
Well, Simon, the problem with bail bondsmen is that, one, we're not judges, juries, or prosecutors. Our job is to bond a person out, presuming that they're innocent or guilty. It really doesn't matter to us. What we're doing is making sure that the bond is secured. And from listening to this and going over, being involved with this as far as Cobra and giving them advice, how to handle this, I see this was a very good bond. It was a bond that I would have ridden myself, to be honest about it. The only problem is with bail bonding, there is no such thing as a good bond unless the bond has been discharged. That is what we consider a good bond in the bail bonding industry. So other than that, this was a perfect bond. I would have done it every day of the week.
Alligators are just grown up lizards, so maybe he's a buddy of yours. That's hard to tell.
Hey, look, I haven't abused a lizard in months. Years.
Yeah. Well, lizard, alligator, or pornography, they all fall up under the same category as we're not judge, jury, or prosecutors. We're looking at it from a different standpoint. We're looking at it as if this a bond that a person will return to court on. There's no such thing. What we're looking at is this a bond that is secured if he doesn't return to court. We don't bond people out to under the presumption that they will come to court or they won't come to court. When we bond someone out, that's the purpose of those applications, is to make sure that these bonds are secured enough where, one, we can find them if they don't. And two, if we don't find them, can we recover our money? And that's pretty much bonding. There's no such thing as a – first of all, I hate saying this because I really don't like the public to know the in and out of bonding, just like traveling in a motorhome. It's a house and you need a warrant. I don't like giving that kind of information to the general public because that's something for them to use. Me, that's why I don't say too much about bonding on open radio, but I deal with my agents and I explain to them about homestead in the state of Florida and how it works. And that's about the size of it.
Yeah.
Well, that's the nice thing about this, the current situation with what we've got going here. Because that was a big concern to us, was the homestead exemption. However, we may not be able to pierce that on Mom's, but on John's, which was put up as collateral, it's worth almost $200,000 itself. So we can force the foreclosure of that to pay our fees. It just takes time. And you know how that works. You've done this long enough to know that.
Okay. You bring up a fascinating aspect. You can only force foreclosure if there has been a default. Has there
Correct.
Been a default here?
Yes. The bond was breached, and because of that breach, we incurred costs, and there were damages based off of that breach. So, yes, we can continue the foreclosure proceeding on that property for those costs per our civil attorney.
Even though the person involved in the breach is now in jail?
Yes.
Wow. I had never heard of that one before. How much money do you think is involved in the breach so far? The foreclosure.
Well, we've incurred attorney's costs, filing fees, and everything else to file the cause of action, and then with the attorney's fees and all. I mean, that's all part of it, and we won't know fully until it's realized, until it goes to court and the judge does what he's going to do. Because see, one thing that a lot of people don't realize about in Florida is, if all the judge has to do is say, I issue a judgment in the amount of this amount of money against Betty Price, at the point she does that, or the judge does that, judgments are enforceable in the state of Florida. We can then take action against any asset she owns to recoup that judgment.
Okay, but you're losing me a little bit. How can there be a judgment? Betty may be a complete dickhead, but son's in jail. I think you mentioned, you know, $50,000-$60,000 outstanding. Am I right?
That's ballpark. I don't know what it's going to end up being at the end of this.
Okay. Wow. You guys earn a lot more than I do. Pretty much all I can say.
Todd, are you still on the line, Todd?
Yes.
Hey, well, Simon, you know, the papers all read that acting upon the tip, the marshals came in and did their thing. That's kind of true, but you'll notice, I don't know if you saw the video or not, but I was there to question Mr. Price, and I said, man, I thought you got killed in a canoe accident. You know, he stuck to the story. He goes, I almost did. So I said, well, I was out there dragging that river, man, and I couldn't find nothing. And all of us, you know what he said? He says, where's my mommy? And Todd says, say it from your chest, motherfucker.
Yeah, put a little bass in that voice.
Where's my mommy? Oh, my God. Well, it's scary because we've been thinking all along there might be something incestuous about this whole damn situation. And that kind of like, you know, if I was disagreeing with my partners any way along the lines, that right there pretty much, when I heard that, where's my mommy? I'm thinking, holy shit, dude.
Yeah, in that scenario, they had us thinking, hey, you know, possible shootout. This guy could possibly, you know, take his own life, and that it could, and it could have, but, you know,
Yeah, we thought that he had so many guns and all these bullets and stuff that, you know, even the Marshal Service at the end of it all, you know, I had put out bulletin and said, I believe he's armed and considered to be dangerous, possible terrorist. Well, you know, Mama went apeshit bananas on that one. And then when we finally do run into the guy or get close to him, even the Marshal Service said, hey, this may be a deal where we have to put him down or, you know, we don't want nobody to get shot. When he come out of there, he was the biggest pussy I've ever seen in my life. I swear.
How old was this guy? How old is he?
49.
49,
50 years old. I actually thought, where's my mommy? Wow.
Where's my mommy?
And that's
right out of his mouth. Where's my mom?
Verbatim.
Verbatim. You know, Rod, back in the day, we would say, man, you need to put a little bass in that. Todd brought out the douche. Say it from your chest.
Forget about that. You should be saying where is, but not mommy.
Yeah. But we should have said it with some bass. Damn.
Where was your chest?
Okay. I'm gonna change the subject completely. How come it's a bunch of folks like you, and I mean no disrespect, because I know you'll come and kick my front door in if you think I'm being disrespectful, but how come it takes you guys to find someone that's dead as opposed to the cops?
Because we've got, well, that's what we do, Simon, and that's, I mean, you know, the police officers, you know, they're busy with all kinds of shit going on. As soon as they get to working on something, it's like working in a wood shop. They working on this piece of wood over there, and then somebody comes in and, hey man, I need this. Hey man, I need this. They got so much shit going on all the time. We are focused. You know, so we picked this file, and we've been talking about it for a couple of weeks, and we've been focused on this file, and we had a lot of distraction. I'm sure we talked about something else here or there, or maybe Wayne got a glass of water or something, but we weren't distracted off of this mission. So we focused on this. We put all our time into this to bring this thing to fruition and keeping a promise. And I said it on this radio show, and I told his mama the same thing. I said, you're looking at the guy who's going to track down your son. Now, if he wants it like that, he might not have a son when it's over with, but he ain't going to hurt none of my boys. I'll tell you that right now. And Ron said it. We're going to get the son of a bitch. Todd said it. Ron himself said it. We all said it. We prophesied it last week. We're going to get him. It's just a matter of time. Now we got him. Now we can move on to another file unobstructed from this or anything else, and we don't have all that shit law enforcement has where they got to do all this paperwork. They're still serving warrants and still going through all this crap that he had in that trailer and all the stuff. Man, we're gone from it. You know, we're closing it out with the show today. We're done with Richard Price or Charles. Who was that guy? Oh, Charles Price. Yeah, that guy. Yeah, we're done with his ass. We're moving on to somebody else now.
Well,
see, Simon, I can
clear,
tell you.
Hold on. Let's be clear on something here, gentlemen. And I need this to be very clear. It's a difference between police officers and U.S. Marshals. And I want that to be very clear, because police officers have a certain duty and U.S. Marshals have a certain duty. Now, we might be good, but we're nothing compared to the Marshal Service. And the reason for that, they have unlimited dollars and they have technology that we're not privileged to. So we want to make sure that it's clear in what we're doing that is different than what the police officers are doing and what the police officers' warrants are doing and what the U.S. Marshals are doing. Because the U.S. Marshals are the best bounty hunters, if you want to use that word, in the world. So we're nothing compared to them.
I agree.
Oh, the interesting thing about this, the contact person that I had on this case is one I've worked with on multitudes of other cases. And the interesting thing about it is, while this case was going on and when he got the FID number on this case, he had two other murders going that he was actively searching for Signal 5 suspects, sitting surveillance and watching for these other two, much more dangerous, in my mind at least, because they'd already killed someone and they could ultimately kill someone else. And he still found the time while sitting surveillance on another case to work on ours that I brought to him that they issued an FID number to. So ultimately, yes, I agree 100% with Rod on this. Those are the top notch. I mean, you cannot get better than the U.S. Marshals. But in a lot of ways, we work almost exactly the same way as them.
Yeah.
We are the private side to them.
Right. In fact, they paid us. They paid us a high tribute on this case. In fact, they said, you guys put us dead on his ass in the area. Without that, we didn't know where he was. He went off the grid. But that Signal 5 case, that murder case that Ron's buddy was working, this is a sick individual who went and killed his buddy's wife and then raped his buddy's 10-year-old daughter. And, yeah, that guy needed to be caught. He was caught the morning before about 3 a.m. And it tied them up a moment. But I'll tell you, you know, we had the guy, you know, cordoned off to a particular area, but the U.S., if it hadn't been for the U.S. Marshals, he'd still be out there because we couldn't get close enough to him. We were within a mile of him after the 20-mile deal. We narrowed it to a mile, but a mile out in the woods is a lot of damn coverage. And they brought in 18 or 22 different guys and busted his ass, and with the help of a helicopter, some resources we did not have. So, you know, our hats off to the marshals. Thank you guys, man, because without Paxton, but the guys,
they
the
are
guys,
10-8, and I mean that's the neat thing that I've learned out of the out of doing this. You know, for, I've been doing this 10 years, not as long as these other guys on the panel. But one of the biggest assets that I ever did was within the first 2 years of doing this job, I networked and I made connections with a lot of U.S. Marshals in a lot of different areas in northern Florida. That simple act of networking with them has made my life doing this job so much easier because, I mean, I don't mind at all. I'll go out after a jump and deal with them, felony, whatever. But when you reach a certain point in cases where you just can't get past a particular point and you got to reach out, the best ones to reach out to ain't your local guys because they do their good in their area, but when you've got that to fall back on, you can sit there, and when these $250,000 bonds come through your door that are solid and you're willing to write them, you can sit in the back of your mind and think to yourself, you know, I'm going to go ahead and do this. It's a solid bond. And you know in the back of your head, if it does go south, you got the resources that you need to get him back.
That's right.
I'm in absolute agreement with you. Now, I don't write bonds, and I don't go hunting for people, but I work on many projects, and I'll look at a project, and I'll go, okay, what resources do I have? You know, if it starts to go south, who can I call? And,
right.
Yep. Rod, you are absolutely correct. Yeah, I'm sure you don't have a Rolodex. Neither do I. But I know someone that can talk sensibly about almost any subject. And I'm sure you're the same way.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of who you know, I've usually ran points on just about every one of my captures, and it was through my investigation that helped to do something. But in this case right here, you know, one of my greatest, newest assets to the team is Mr. Matthew Todd, a.k.a. Silver, and without his one little piece of the puzzle, I doubt this would have ever been solved. It wouldn't have been solved within the last 48 hours, if ever. But you know what? The rookie of the team with the 16th capture to his name pulled this shit off, and without that, we've been still sucking buttermilk. But I tell you what, I commend the guy, and you know, it takes all parts of the body to make something happen. The finger does its job, the hand, the foot, the head. But in this case, that one piece was picked upon by the youngest and the littlest guy of the bunch. And I'll tell you what, my hat's off to the guy. And I have a valuable resource. Now I actually have two resources because now I just found out that Mr. Ron has 300 hours in the Marshal Service. So, hell, he's just as good as a Marshal in Nashville. So call my Marshal buddy. Hey, Hammer, get this shit nailed.
Matt, have you caught up on your sleep and got off a steady, you know, diet of donuts?
You don't eat donuts.
The biggest thing is we got this sick individual off the streets, and he's back where he needs to be, and everybody was safe. So that's the biggest thing.
Amen.
Ron, as in R-O-N, are you happy this case is over?
Oh, yes. Oh, I am glad. We had 29 hours left when the handcuffs went on him. 29 hours. That was all we had left to the deadline.
I heard this, and I've got to admit, I chuckled a little bit. You know, there's a popular TV series, The First 48. You know, the deal is, if you don't catch the criminal in the first 48 hours, you're screwed. This case was more like the last 48.
It really was.
It must have been nail biting.
Oh yeah, it was nerve wracking. I will tell you. But looking back, and hindsight's always 20/20. But looking back, when we got the order from the marshals, and I say order, when we got the request to just remain in the area, that pretty much our job was done. I should have knew then that he was about to be in custody. But just like any one of us, you know, you get down to the wire after busting your ass in this case for over 50 days trying to catch somebody. And then you get that god awful sentence that comes out of somebody who's got a little bit more power than you do that says, "Hey man, just stand down for a minute, hang tight where you're at. We'll let you know once we're done." It's like instantaneously takes every bit of the wind out of your sails.
No, it was an instantaneous. All in accord. Fuck that shit.
Right.
That's what we did.
But there was a reason behind it from them. They didn't want us to push him.
Right.
Because they had a general idea where he was, and they didn't want us to push him out of that area.
Right.
So I get where they were coming from, but it still pisses us. I mean, it pissed me off. But I didn't want to be the guy, and I told this to the team that day. I said, "I don't want to be the guy that fucks this up because we're out there and we do something that they've asked us to stand down, and we push forward, and he gets gone, and we're starting over from scratch. I don't want to be that guy."
Yeah, no.
I seem to recall a phone call from Cobra,
yeah.
Much along the same lines.
Oh, I was pissed.
He told us to back off. Fuck them.
Yeah. I mean, that was the general consensus. I mean, all of us were thinking the same thing, but in the backside of it, we're thinking, well, shit, if they're telling us to back off, there must be a reason for it. We don't need to stir the pot if they're trying to do something. And it was just a fucked up mess. But one thing that I did, you were talking about what you do, Simon, and all that kind of stuff with the books and everything. I'm going to read you something. It's on my Facebook page. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's my profile picture. It's a quote from a very famous writer. It says, "There is no hunting like the hunting of man, and those who have hunted armed men long enough and liked it never care for anything else thereafter."
Hemingway.
Ernest Hemingway.
That's right. He must have been a hunter.
That is very true.
Very true.
It's rather like the tagline I used on the article about Mr. Price.
Yeah.
descriptions of my death have been greatly exaggerated.
that was true, too.
That was beautiful. Mark Twain.
Yeah. But, you know, we did do what the marshals told us. We were good little boys. We were bitching like little kids. But we all went to a little place, and we sat down underneath a tree, and we walked the dog, and we talked about, you know, the birds and the bees and all kinds of stupid shit. But we were good little boys and girls, and we played properly.
You know?
But we weren't happy with this shit. I'll let you know that. We were not happy.
Oh, no.
But we did do good, and we finally got them to concede that, because we were told flat out, you guys can keep doing what you're doing, and we'll just watch you. Or you can let us handle it, and you can watch us. But you stay the hell away. Okay. Well, you at least let us be there when you knock the damn door in, at least. You know, please, free, please. Okay. You fuckers, we'll call you.
See, Simon, that's the difference between a hunter and a hunter. Some guys want to be on the scene, and other guys want to be at home with their lizard. And once the thing has been adopted by the feds to me, man, I'm that guy who home with the lizard.
Yeah. Hey, Rod, you're welcome here anytime. We'll go hunt ourselves down a lizard.
Oh, my God. Well, you're putting me out of business, man, because, you know, that's my only fallback job. When the hammer tried nailing me, that's the only job I had was to go hunt fucking lizards.
I'm on 301, way to go, left or right? I'm like, well, what the marshal says. Rod, go left or right? I'm like, what the marshal said. Rod, do I turn left or right? I'm like, okay, fuck it, turn left.
Hey, he dialed us right the fuck in there, too, boy. I'll tell you what, jeez. But what did Marshall say? I didn't want to ask you. I asked you why I need to turn, right or left. Yeah. Oh, man.
Okay, gentlemen. I'm looking at the clock. I'd like to go once around the table to get everyone's parting thoughts. Ron, as in R-O-N, I'm going to start with you. I know that this wasn't your favorite hunt, but you must be pretty happy that it's come to an end.
Yeah, I mean, it, in a way, I'm glad that it's over with. I mean, I'm glad we actually did something larger than just protect a liability in capturing this guy. We've actually assisted the powers that be in getting a very dangerous and just an evil monster off the street. But what's even more so is it's allowed, this one hunt has built up stronger relationship, I think, with that I what I had with Cobra Fryer. I got to meet Matt. Matt's a 10-8 guy. I got nothing to say bad about Matt. They were a huge help. And, you know, if it weren't for the fact that I reached out when I did, we wouldn't be sitting where we're at right now. I truly believe that. So the fact that we can call upon each other in certain situations, which Cobra's done before, when he's reached out to me to help him on things, predominantly because he just doesn't want to step foot back in Putnam County.
Okay. I'll tell you what, we have another caller. Someone from the 978 area code.
Yes, hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Yep, hello.
Yeah. Hi. I'm sorry, I got a little lost. What is the topic of discussion right now?
We're closing out right now, sir.
What, you're calling me? No, I called you.
No, I didn't call you. I'd
like to talk
what's
about
your
question right now
for us? Oh, dear. He seems to have disappeared.
It's that same.
Okay. Rod, as in R-O-D. He as in David. You must be absolutely delighted that Cobra is off this case right now.
I am so delighted that he's off this case right now because I am tired of getting phone calls 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning asking questions for a case that has nothing to do with me. So I am so happy he's finished with this case. And Cobra, I want my money or what I spent on this case right now.
Have you ever considered taking Cobra out back?
No, I'm attacking Cobra. I'm attacking Cobra because he's the only one other than Matt don't call other than, hey, where are we going to get this theme for the office? Other than that, Cobra calls me every 5 freaking minutes. Listen, we need this done. We need that done. This need to be done. Where is this sucker right now? Like I got a crystal ball and gonna be able to tell him where he's at right now. You know, but every now and then I do look in my crystal ball and tell him where to go. And I'm so happy that this case is over. And again, for you agents out there that looking for a company that does more and provide paper for you to write on, give me a call, Surety3, and I will be more than happy to help you out with a company that actually get down and help you look for people that have nothing to do with them at all.
And can you
well, Ron, thank you for your help, my friend. I do. Sure, we do appreciate it.
You'll protect callers from Cobra.
Oh shit!
Oh, Rob went quiet.
Yeah.
I'm giving Cobra the closing.
And Matthew.
That's not me.
Yeah, the hell it ain't.
And that's not me.
The hell it ain't.
Are you sure?
He's only got that shit. That's what plays in his ear at 5:00 in the morning when I call him.
Matthew, you did an enormous amount on this case. You must have happy thoughts.
Yeah, I'm glad we were able to. Everybody had an important role in this case, and you know it was nerve wracking because it was down to the wire. But you know, like I said, I'm with the man Cobra, and I know you know in the end we're gonna get our man. And I also like to thank the Hammer as well for being there and being a part of this. And I'm just glad we could. Hey, Cobra, when's the next one? That's all I gotta say. Let's go.
Hey, Rod just told us, man, we gotta bust the move up to Tampa.
Man, let's be about it. Let's go.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, folks, bust the move. I really want to thank you all for talking to me today. It's been a great program, and let's do it again soon.
Yeah. I didn't get no damn party phone.
Thank you, Simon.
Till next week, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. We'll be back again soon. Till next time, goodbye.
Bye.